Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Second down and four at the 20-yard line of New England. Mixon in the backfield. CJ under center. Stroud gives to Joe. Over left guard. Bounces to the outside. 15, 10, 5 to the pylon. He's got it. Touchdown, Joe Mixon. Checked back into the game and checks into the end zone for six on a 20-yard TD run. Third down and a long 10 from the Patriot 40. May shotgun. Two receivers each side, one back, Gibson. Here's the snap to May. He's in trouble. He's sacked back at the 30-yard line. Will Anderson Jr., hat trick.
Is that the hat trick?
Yes, it is. Three on the day for Will.
Yeah, really proud of all of our guys today for this win. Started off hot, really excited about how we came out. First quarter, came out third quarter, really nice job all the way across the board with our offense and how they ran the football to run for over 190 yards versus a really stout defense, right? Really impressive, starting with the offensive line, right? And then you give credit to our backs, right? Having Damian, having Joe back was huge for us, huge lift for our team. Very excited to see those guys continue to do more for us, but very pleased with the run game and how they got after it today.
Love it. Love it. Love it. It is a victorious reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610. The queen is dead. The New England Patriots, the streak, the demons exercised. It's done. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We've got 2 hours and I'm going to enjoy these 2 hours. 41-21, the final score yesterday as we welcome you in on a reaction Monday. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne, and we both got big smiles on our faces today.
We do. That was a fun one yesterday. Yeah. And it was, it wasn't a masterpiece or anything, but it was two things that I've been really, really eagerly awaiting with this football team. One was the defense had only taken the ball away three times. They were one of the league's worst at taking the ball away, which was odd, and it did not make sense given how well they pressure the passer, the guys they have in coverage. And yesterday, the pendulum swung back big time. They take the ball away four times. And then offensively, look, the run game. You rush for over 100 yards more than your opponent. It came on a couple of huge, huge run plays by each Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce. But the sum total of it on the day is I felt like, all right, it started off a little bit frustrating. They were running the ball and not all that effectively. And then they started to build, and eventually the dam broke. If this was already a good rushing football team, you expect stuff like that. And then back in the day, the Kubiak days when they were really good, people would get frustrated because they're running, and then they're running, it's not working in the first half, and then all of a sudden the dam breaks. So explosive plays in the run game are always a good thing. And would I prefer it to be 5 yards every single time? Sure. But I thought that was really great on a couple of fronts that I had been concerned about ever since Joe Mixon left, especially just creating turnovers, run the ball. They did both those things. I'm very, very happy.
You promised us a wave of turnovers on Friday and on the pregame show yesterday, Seth. And the Texans backed up your promise. There were a wave of turnovers. And I'll be honest, the three in the second half were big. The Texans have struggled in the second half of football games the last 3 weeks. Against the Vikings, they struggled all game. Against the Jags, they struggled the second half. And against the Bills, they didn't score a touchdown in the second half. The fact that, and again, it's the Patriots. Patriots aren't as good as any of those teams. But you're on the road, kind of one of these dank October days in New England. New England goes into the locker room at halftime with a little bit of momentum. They score a touchdown. I thought giving up a field goal to them at the end of the half would have been egregious. They gave up a touchdown at the end of the half. But then they come out, and to me, and we'll relive all the big plays of this game as we go on. To me, the biggest play of the game was the Danielle Hunter strip sack fumble to open the second half, second play of the second half, and then the second play following the fumble, touchdown to Stephon Diggs. And that was where I wasn't nervous about this game, even when it was 14-7. I knew the better team was probably eventually, the Texans are significantly better than this Patriots team. But it took the starch out of the crowd. The crowd was kind of back into it. I thought that was the biggest sequence of a game. For a game that wound up a 20-point game, I thought that was the biggest sequence in the game right there.
That, and I think their ability to do that, it's something over the course of a season, it all stacks up and adds up. In any given game, you know, you can't always depend on turnovers. That's a hazard. If your team, think about some of those old Bears teams. Like when Lovie Smith's team went to the Super Bowl, they feasted on turnovers, except eventually, kind of like just like in baseball playoffs, your bats are going to go dry at some point. You got to have pitching. If you want to make a championship run, it's awesome to have that ability to force turnovers, but you also got to be able to do it in other ways. And that's why I think that doing it on both sides of the ball with both the run on offense and then creating turnovers on defense, that felt like, oh, okay, you could win this way.
Yes.
This is a tool in your toolkit so that, okay, you come in the playoffs against a team and and the other big thing, just the Texans smothering the run for the Patriots. Now, look, no Ramondre Stevenson, et cetera, except, okay, that's what you should do then.
Exactly.
And especially with Azeez Alshire out for good chunks of the game, and we still don't have any updates on his injury, that was very encouraging. So the run defense being able to squelch the Patriots' rushing offense, with or without Ramondre Stevenson, that was nice to watch.
Really, really nice to watch. I would say the other big thing, too, in this game, again, something we asked for. Like, okay, either Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson or both make this one of those games. You know, one of you or maybe both of you is going to wind up with 12, 13, 15 sacks this year. A lot of the way that J.J. Watt used to get to 20 sacks a year was he feasted on bad teams. If you take your hand and you put it over Will Anderson's name in the box score and you look at his stat sheet from yesterday, 8 tackles, 3 sacks, 4 TFLs, 3 QB hits. He tipped a pass that led to an interception. That's what J.J. Watt's box score used to look like every week in 2014 and 2015. Every week.
Yeah.
I remember
doing
the postgame show, and we would look and go, what crooked numbers did J.J. Watt put up today? 7 tackles, 5 QB hits. You know, that Will Anderson was that dude yesterday.
He was feasting on a bad offensive line.
Yes.
And if you ever find yourself arguing with somebody who wants to say, well, JJ wasn't that good, he racked up all these sacks against the Jaguars, et cetera, take somebody through this exercise. Could you please tell me how Reggie White apparently must have taken days off versus bad offensive linemen? Is that okay? I didn't realize that Howie Long just didn't even show up when there were bad offenses. Yes, this is what you do.
You feast on the
weaklings and the dullards of the world.
Yeah.
In football and in life.
Yeah.
Kids,
yes.
Take heed.
Right.
Feast on the dullards. If you're looking around the room and you can't find the dullard, you're the dullard.
That's right.
Find something different to excel in.
That's right.
And whatever. Get out of that room ASAP.
ASAP.
Get yourself into a room that suits you better.
You are going to get feasted on shortly. Yes. here was D'Amico Ryans. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Clearly excited about the big day for Will Anderson yesterday.
Yeah, man, proud of Will. Massive game for him to be able to get after the quarterback the way he did. 3 sacks, also forced an interception there by E. Murray. Just a really, really productive day by him, and he stayed out there. I loved his energy right from start to finish. Right, he came out. I felt his mindset in pregame warm-up, so knew it was going to be a really good day for him. Will he's getting better every week, and this is his best game by far.
The one thing that I really liked about him, I thought his 3rd sack, it was a really good display of how he's evolved as a player since last year, because he anticipated the chip block by the tight end and ducked under that and without breaking stride and ended up beating. It was like he was doing a ski slalom.
Mm-hmm.
He just curved around the one flag, which was a tight end, and then he went to the right and curved around the left tackle, which was another flag. What do they call them? The gates? Whatever it is in skiing,
something,
Sean.
Like that,
yes.
Yeah.
So that was really nice to see. And I thought, too, man, I think this defensive line has done a really good job really affecting mobile quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
and they face so many good athletic mobile quarterbacks, and partly just because that's the NFL these days.
Yeah.
But the sack numbers haven't really reflected how uncomfortable they've made quarterbacks. And the biggest difference yesterday, I thought, aside from going against a bad offense with the Patriots, but the thing that I was nervous about and why the Texans let them back into the game a little bit was, okay, clearly without Lassiter out there, they're shy one person in the secondary that they're comfortable playing man. Yeah. And they, I was surprised the Texans were blitzing as much as they were. Mm-hmm. It felt like, all right, you guys are doing a good job with a four-man pass rush. Don't stick Eric Murray out there having to track people across the field single high coverage.
Yep.
It's Eric Murray was kind of a microcosm of what you should have been concerned about with the defense is that, man, he did some really good things, but also he's got some weaknesses, and you got to try to protect that.
You know where I think that shows up, what you're talking about, the pressure that they're getting, but not the sacks, at least until yesterday, not the sacks. I mean, Will was a one-man wrecking crew. Is the completion percentage of these opposing quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's showing up, is they're putting enough heat on quarterbacks to where they're having to make awkward throws, bad throws, challenge throws. I think it's showing up statistically, just not in sacks, but Will was tremendous yesterday. Real quickly, the other thing, no Nico Collins yesterday.
And I wasn't aware of that.
The fact that they were efficient on, they weren't explosive on offense.
Yeah.
By and large, I mean, they had a couple long runs, and that was great to see, as you pointed out. But in the passing game, nothing explosive. But CJ, super efficient throwing to Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. You know, again, nothing, you know, shots downfield wise. But throwing to Tank Dell and Nico Collins, or throwing to Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, CJ was 13 of 16, 134 yards. They each had a touchdown in the red zone, you know, so in the tight quarters, they were each able to get open in the end zone. 141 passer rating thrown to those two guys, you know, which is what his passer rating always has been around throwing to Nico Collins. So they found a way to get it done yesterday in the passing game.
The precision when he's throwing some of that short and intermediate stuff is one of the more underrated things that you quickly grow accustomed to and forget that he's really good at it until you watch Drake May, like, who I thought played well yesterday given all the circumstances. But some of those shorter things are like, those are the things that are a difference, you know, in a game a lot, are some of the screens. And you look at CJ, the one throw he made under duress to Joe Mixon out to the right sideline. I mean, Mixon caught it. Like, he led Mixon perfectly. And that ended up being a 15 or 20 yard gain.
That's right.
Like, those kinds of things. That's the kind of stuff that Mahomes does that's underrated, is just to touch on some of the shorter stuff.
It was a good day yesterday, man. Good day. Good day around the NFL for the Texans. Good day in Foxborough for the Texans. We'll talk more about it in the next segment. We'll hear from Will Anderson. How has Danielle Hunter been helping him? What did he think of his day? What's his mindset this year? CJ Stroud does not care about what you haters say about him giving advice to young quarterbacks, okay? That much is very clear.
So did he not read my notes?
We'll get to that. He did not, Seth. He doesn't care what you have to say.
I sent him such a nice letter.
Handwritten and everything.
I had it. Well, I used the program to make it look like handwriting. But yes.
ChatGPT handwritten for you. So we'll get to all that coming up in the next segment. Texans win yesterday 41-21. It's a reaction Monday.
3rd and 10 from the New England 40. Here's the snap. Here's Will Anderson Jr. Bring it down the quarterback. Came around the end and sacked Drake May.
Man, it's a blessing, man. And I just take from last year to this year, like, how I would get down on myself not getting a sack from, like, week one from all the way to week 8, 9. And it's like, now it's like, you just got to keep chopping, man. You just got to keep going and getting better and keep working your moves. And don't be scared to throw moves. I think sometimes last year I was scared to throw moves. And, like, this year, like, man, if it happened, it happened. I think that's just, like, something this year is like, bro, like, it's going to come. Just keep being consistent, keep chopping wood. And it's just a blessing to be able to go out there and do that. But I would give a big credit to my D-line, man. These guys are tremendous at what they do, man. It's a group, and it's very special, and I love those guys.
Chop wood, carry water has become a common refrain with Will Anderson. Also, C.J. Stroud cited it yesterday in his press conference. It was first written by the Chinese poet Van Morrison, I believe. Was
the great Chinese poet. I loved his poem, Brown Eyed Girl.
It was a good poem. It's a Zen Buddhist proverb, but it applies to a lot of endeavors in life. Chop wood, carry water, don't think about it. Just keep working.
Yep.
Just keep chopping wood.
And Will Anderson does that, man. And it's funny. He's right, man. You go back and watch some of the mic'd up from him last year. Particularly, I think it was a game against the Saints where he almost sacked Derek Carr like 5 different times, but I don't think he sacked him at all in that game. Because remember, Will got a sack against Lamar Jackson in week 1, then didn't get another one for like 8 weeks. He sacked Baker Mayfield in week 9. And I think it's interesting, like, that Will needs to remind himself of that, because you're, as an edge rusher, of Will's caliber, you're on the field, assuming health, you're on the field for what, conservatively, like 600 snaps, 700 snaps through the course, like 50 snaps a game.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah, during the course of a season,
the course of a season, probably about 1,000. Yeah. And you're going to get a good edge rusher is going to get 15 sacks. You know,
right,
15
right.
out of 1,000. So that's like, yeah. he talks about getting down on himself. Like, no, man, you're going to get a sack on like 1% of these.
It is. Well, it is really hard. And honestly, with the Texans, we talked about this last week. They try to be disciplined in their pass rush. And what that means is sometimes with pass rushers, it's, you know, you're selfishly motivated. You want sacks. That's how you get paid. It's not even selfish. It's like that's what the system is set up to reward you for,
yeah.
is an exorbitant number of sacks. That's
yes.
just how it works. The executives will tell you, well, pressures matter just as much. Yeah, that's nice, but you pay the guys who get a lot of sacks.
Right.
That's the incentive system that's in place. But sometimes if you're going for max sackage, there's some selfishness involved with some guys in the way they operate. You see them running past the quarterback a lot, just trying to swipe at the ball as they go by. I think one thing that Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson have done a good job of is there's times like when they get to the level of the quarterback, they turn back in and just try to squeeze the pocket. And that's an unselfish thing. So you're trying to do all of the right things, but when it's not yielding sacks, you got to keep reminding yourself, yeah, okay, I'm a team player.
Yep.
I'm not going to make it all about sacks. It's about a group pass rush. And I think that's where the Texans have done a good job. They were leading the league in pressure rate. Their sack rate was eighth best in the league mm-hmm. headed into yesterday. I'll have to check, you know, after tonight what it is tomorrow.
Probably better.
But it's been very much a group effort. You've
yeah.
seen nondescript defensive tackles get the lion's share of sacks a lot of times, not because they're great pass rushers, but because it's a good group effort. And they're like, oh, okay, quarterback's going to dribble out to you this rep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we know that the AFC is stacked with really good quarterbacks, some having better years than others. I think CJ's having a really good year. I feel great that we've got our guy in this AFC. So the fewer, the better when it comes to the Texans' chances down the road. With that said, what did you think of Drake May yesterday for the Patriots? If you're a Patriots fan, are you optimistic based on yesterday?
I think they should be. I thought the best thing that I saw, honestly, were some of the, to use an old Tom Brady phrase, is the boring stuff is the most important stuff. And for a rookie, I thought he showed good judgment for knowing when to run, when to throw the ball away. I mean, every time I see a rookie go to the sideline and throw the ball away and take an incompletion instead of giving up a sack, I go back to what it was like with a young David Carr, who was the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And there were things where David, as a young quarterback, just didn't operate the way a lot of these young quarterbacks operate now when it comes to some of that game management type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought he was good there. Look, he absolutely airmailed that first deep ball and then comes back and throws the ball directly to Kalen Bullock. Like, it was not a good start for him.
No.
And I thought you saw some nerves over the course of the game and with some of the stuff he did in the second half. Yeah, the kid might be the real deal. Who
yeah.
knows? That was more impressive to me than some other rookie debuts like Will Levis's last year or what have you, where they don't necessarily show the actual quarterbacking skills. They show some arm talent, but they don't show the mental part of it.
Yep. CJ got a chance to talk to Drake May after the game. All you haters that out there that were like, why is CJ giving Caleb Williams advice on the field? I mean, they're like the same age. Why is he doing this? That's not going to stop him. And by the way, he's not really giving advice. I think he's giving encouragement. He was asked after the game, CJ Stroud, did you get a chance to talk to Drake May?
Yeah, I gave him a little word, you know, tried to give him a little word of encouragement. And, you know, I thought he played really solid, you know. Definitely, you know, feel like he'll get better and better as he keeps going.
You know, reflecting on CJ's advice to Caleb, I still think part of it was in the phrasing. I mean, when he said, don't worry about those mistakes you made, that was a that could very easily be taken the wrong way.
Hey, man, don't worry about losing the game for your team.
Don't,
It's okay.
Hey, man, don't worry about how lost you looked out there under duress in the second half, okay?
Dude,
Caleb, you won't be this dumb forever. That's what he basically said.
Bears fans should be thankful. Caleb Williams has looked good since that advice from C.J. Stroud in week 2.
Yeah, a little tough love might be all right.
Might have created a monster there in Chicago, C.J. Stroud.
I got PO'd, by the way, at one of the final questions in the press conference was obviously somebody from New England who basically was like, I'll paraphrase. Do you even know who Tom Brady was? I mean, you're young. Have you ever heard of Tom Brady? And was there anything that impressed you about him? It was almost that bad. It was almost like, hey, I know you were young when Tom Brady, but have you ever, do you ever think maybe something, he did some good things? And CJ was like, yeah, I know him, but I talked to him. He's given me a lot of advice personally.
It was interesting. We got CJ on the postgame show yesterday, which was really cool. He called in and we chatted with him for, 5 minutes or so. Clint and I did. And I asked him
name drop much, Sean?
You're damn right. But I asked him how aware he was that the Texans had never won up there before. Because you never
know,
you never know how coaches handle it. If a coach is going to be, hey man, we're not thinking about the past, we're just forward looking, we're the better team, we don't need to think about that. Or do they hearken back to it? And it stood
especially when D'Amico is your coach.
That's what I was just going to say. It stood to reason that D'Amico actually leaned into it heavy, which CJ said, I don't know how heavy he leaned into it. But CJ said, yeah, D'Amico brought it up early in the week with us. That, if you're looking for a reason, to get up for this game, just know that the franchise has never won there before.
Yeah.
So I like that.
And then there was that clip of Will Anderson in the pregame. It's not suitable for radio, but basically saying, if you're not from Houston, then forget about you.
Yes.
I will say that. He said, if you ain't from Houston, forget about you.
Oh, man. Will played blue, huh? And
I'll be honest with you, I only read the headline to the tweet as I was scrolling through, and I saw him all animated and everything.
Yeah.
He got really loud after his third sack, too.
I saw
that. They picked it up on the TV. I was like, oh, we might get an unsavory word here. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, no, but I thought, D'Amico, honestly, okay, this is very selfishly, and as a former player, I do appreciate that part of D'Amico who fully embraces that this has been a franchise for a long time and doesn't try to actively distance himself from previous iterations of it, like Bill O'Brien famously did on Hard Knocks. I like that. I like that a lot.
Do you want to hear what Ted Johnson had to say about C.J. Stroud? He texted me last night.
Let me hear it.
Was
he hating on him? I will kick his ass. You hear me, Ted? I will kick your ass.
I'm here for that fight.
I will be for about 37 seconds. And then his training will take over. I got to get him in the first 37 seconds or my endurance is going to kill me.
That's it. Ted texted me this unsolicited last night. Ted texted me, I'm rewatching the game and I'm falling in love with your quarterback. Watch the throw he makes on 2nd and 11. I know the exact throw he's talking about. Watch the throw he makes on 2nd and 11 at the 2 minute mark of the second quarter. He's running backwards and jumps while throwing across his body and hits the receiver perfectly in stride, running upfield for a big gain to get the drive started. The play design on the Tank Dell touchdown was awesome. He's running across the field in the back of the end zone. But you need an athletic quarterback to be able to do that. Yeah, because CJ was rolling to his right doing that.
Yeah.
The play designs overall are very impressive. It's also the players you all have on offense, just explosive players at each position. That's a good team you've got. Will Anderson is straight up destroying dudes. That was Ted's assessment of the game yesterday.
Jeez, Ted.
Sounds like he wants to move back to Houston to me.
Let's get him back here.
Yes.
Now, he was telling us how happy he was last week, and I was like, I can't tempt him with that.
Happy schmappy.
Can't tempt him with our guacamole. I think there are some things that CJ does that I think we take for granted.
Very much.
And a lot of it is just in, I mean, you know what I noticed? When I did a cut up last week of, I wanted to look at CJ throwing to Stephon Diggs when CJ was under pressure.
Yeah.
There were two no looks in there that had escaped my attention that there were even no looks. And I feel like this is one area where I actually want it to fly under the radar.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want people to be largely aware of it or it to become a thing. I just want them to kind of ambush people with it. That he kind of casually pulls off no-look passes all the time.
No,
and it doesn't garner the same kind of Mahomes, like, shock and awe.
Some of the throws he makes it in the box score just show up as, like, an 8-yard pass on 3rd and 5.
Yeah.
That's why watching the game with Clint is really good. Like, a former quarterback who realizes how hard it is. Because there will be times CJ will make a throw, and he makes it look super easy, and I'll just look over at Clint, and Clint will be just like, Chief. Chief. Just shake his head. Like that's how hard what he's – that's how easy he's making the difficult
work. Some of the stuff over the middle, too. Remember when John Harris on the TV broadcast had kind of remarked about, like, wow, I don't know if Josh Allen is making that throw, and the football nerds came up and like, well, actually, according to the Klondorf, Josh Allen throws over the middle all the time.
Sharp.
Like, no, dude, no, he's threading the needle with some of these middle defenders.
Yeah.
And just like, he's like putting it under the crook of the arm of a linebacker sometimes to squeeze it into Stephon Diggs or Nico. It's really, and it, but it looks like nothing afterwards because it's so quick and on rhythm and in time.
He makes it look so easy. It's really remarkable. All right, headlines. We'll recap the big points of the Texans win. Big name coming back this week. We'll get to that. Brutal injury in the NFL yesterday. Maybe the biggest non-quarterback injury you could draw up yesterday happened. We'll get to all of that, and that's in headlines coming up next.
Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get right into it. Headlines. We got plenty of audio coming up at 7 o'clock. We will relive the big plays from Sunday's win over the Patriots through the voice of Vandy. We'll relive some of the highlights with you, take you through them. Do that at 7 o'clock. But just know the Patriots, the Texans beat the Patriots 41-21 yesterday. First time ever the Texans are victorious at Gillette Stadium. They did it in grand style. My favorite numbers on this game, Seth.
Ooh.
C.J. Stroud, 3 touchdown passes. Will Anderson, 3 sacks. A little symmetry there between our top 2 picks. How about this? C.J. Stroud, 192 yards passing. The Texans, 192 yards rushing as a team. That is balance, my friend.
Right that's extreme balance. I thought and then I think the Texans rush defense doing incredibly well as well. I mean, really, the quarterback was the guy that hurt them most. Drake May have been their leading rusher.
By far. He was double the next closest guy. Yeah.
Their running backs ran for somewhere around 40 yards total, I think. I mean, that was...
I'm doing the math. 44 yards total from the
44 yards twice. Yeah, I underestimated you, Patriots rushing attack. Sans Ramondre Steele. Yeah.
Jerk face.
I thought that, again... One of the things I liked best about yesterday was that the two real driving forces behind that win, the run game and the big runs, I mean, Damian really sealed it with that huge touchdown run.
That was great.
But then, so that's something that we haven't seen since Indianapolis, the running game being a huge factor. Yep. Two was that the pendulum finally swung back, and a defense that looked like they should be getting a lot of turnovers created a lot of turnovers. So different ways to win, different ways to beat different teams. Can they show up? Are they there for you? Every game tells a different story, Sean. To quote another non-Patriot slayer, Brock Osweiler.
Right.
Every victory tells a story, and sometimes you got to do it differently. Yesterday was a different way of doing things.
The things they were supposed to do well against this particular team, they did very, very well. And that was good to see, and that's how you win by 20 points. Could have even been more, but we'll take it. 41-21. Texans get DeNico Autry back this week from suspension. What does that mean for them?
Sweet googly moogly. I kind of forgot all about
it. That's it, man. Yeah.
Except for people mentioning it yesterday.
Right.
I'm excited about that. I think some of these, where the quarterbacks had led the league in quarterback pressures but didn't have the sack totals that match that, some of that's just because of athletic quarterbacks getting outside of the pocket. And DeNico Autry helps in that regard. I think both as an edge rusher and an interior rusher. Remember, DeNico Autry's versatility is one of the best things about him. So I think there's going to be times where he's rushing on the inside. I think there's other times where he's going to be rushing on the edge. But he moves really well in space.
Mm-hmm.
He does a great job of tracking guys down, getting his hand in a passing lane to make them pull the ball down. He created one of the funniest Deshaun Watson lowlights of the year last year when he was corralling Deshaun Watson. Deshaun turned around and threw the ball inaccurately 15 yards backwards
directly
and
backwards.
Missed his running back.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that Danico Autry can do. So when you're looking for drive-killing sacks and actually finishing the deal, he's going to be really good, not just as a primary pass rusher, but as a guy that picks up flushed out quarterbacks. So I'm excited about that. He's healthy. Yes. He was banged up during camp.
He was. I would hope the 6 weeks he's had off have been a chance for him to get right and get ready to go. Programming note, Nick Caserio joining us on the show 7:30 Wednesday this week. He's the executive vice president and general manager of the Houston Texans. He's the one that got this party together, basically.
I heard he was doing crotch chops on the sideline to all the Patriots
personnel
afterwards.
That would be awesome. Afterwards. In his mind, I'm guessing he was.
I don't know. He sounded kind of conflicted when he's talking about the Patriots last week. He was GM show with John and Mark.
Yeah.
It's just not. He didn't sound conflicted. He never sounds emotional. Right. But he just, he's very respectful and I think honestly, like, obviously grateful for his time there.
Almost annoyingly respectful. Yeah. Yeah.
Be at your turn heel,
yeah,
Nick.
Yeah, turn heel.
I'm watching this Vince McMahon documentary so I can get to know you better, Sean. And, man, I am. I kind of want to retro. I might take a vacation week to go back and do nothing but learn the history of pro wrestling from the WWE expansion onward.
Okay, that's... I watched, to get to know you better, I watched the Menendez Netflix documentary this weekend. You refer to it.
Listeners know, it's because I watched the Menendez Brothers. Yeah, not because I plotted to kill my parents didn't have the guts to go through with it. Right. Nothing like that.
If you were new to the show, that would come across as one of the all-time zingers right there. But I was being truthful. You are a bit of a Menendez enthusiast.
I went into a rabbit. I never was. I was in high school when the Menendez Brothers stuff was happening. So it was one of those things. You know how it is in high school. You kind of vaguely aware of stuff, but not really. Yeah.
No, Amy put it on Netflix, the documentary, not the one that has actors in it right now, not the biopic, the Netflix documentary where they interviewed both of them over the phone from prison.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I knew they killed their parents, but I didn't know all the details. And in the first 5 minutes, I'm asking Amy these details. She's like, do you not know about, like really, like looking at me like I was stupid. Like, do you not know about like all these details?
She was looking at me like I was stupid as
by
I was
proxy,
watching it.
She was, yeah, a little
the
bit.
Hell,
probably deservedly so. I would guess. Hey, let's get to these other headlines here. In the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys are terrible, and they're especially terrible at home. They lose 47-9 to the Detroit Lions at home. The big story from this game, though, Seth, is actually really bad news for the Lions. I don't know that I could come up with a more significant non-quarterback injury in the NFL than Aiden Hutchinson breaking his tibia yesterday in a gruesome, gruesome injury. Mm. Both teams gathered around the cart.
I haven't looked at it at all. There's a graphic. Is it a Joe Theismann type?
It's in that realm. Yeah,
that's what I figured.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you don't need to watch it. Just know that it was bad.
Oh. I just had a flashback to Joe Theismann. Okay, yeah, I can't. No.
Don't watch it.
Poor Aiden Hutchinson. That sucks.
Don't watch it. Yeah. Well, in the Lions, I mean, he's their best player. He was the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year going into yesterday. So that's a tough one for the Lions.
They managed to beat the Cowboys without him for the rest of the game.
By 38 or whatever.
If that's any consolation. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a good day yesterday, man. Cowboys get blown out. The Browns lose again. So Deshaun had a horrible game. The Titans and Colts played each other, so one of those teams had to lose. So that was cool. Mm-hmm. It was the Titans yesterday.
Dude, I'll tell you what. If you're a Cowboys fan, I can only imagine what it's like to look at the odds board for next coach fired and see Mike McCarthy all the way down at fifth and know that, this has nothing to do with merit or anything. This is completely about Jerry Jones just keeping Jason Garrett around forever and Jerry Jones being so slow to make decisions.
Yeah.
And Mike McCarthy can get away with this probably for two more years. So look forward to that, Cowboys fans.
Yes. The NFL, we'll go around the NFL probably more in detail tomorrow, but those are the big things that happened there. College football, AP Top 25 is out. Texas number one again after destroying Oklahoma this weekend. Yeah, 34-3, they beat the Sooners. Oregon up to number two. Yeah. Seth Payne is an Oregon household.
Having a child who cares zero about sports, it was hilarious. Like, Dad, what... What is this college game day? Why? Like, they're blocking the entrance to the Anthropology Building.
Yeah, exactly.
In my now, this was I'm going to take this up with ESPN. Apparently, they had blocked off the handicap access, and were trying to like they had blocked. So my one of my students' friends was having an issue getting in, so I had to give the to ESPN. Yeah,
okay, that's dirty pool right there.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it was hilarious. I was like, I kept texting updates during the Oregon game, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're missing this.
It was a hell of a game.
It was
a really good game. Oregon ends up beating Ohio State. Ohio State only falls to 4. This was one of those games where you do start to feel like the 12-team playoff water the season down a little bit. Like in any other in any previous season, that's an elimination game. Oregon and Ohio State in October.
Yeah.
And it was still had some juice, and it was still great. But both these teams are going to be in the playoff. Hell, both these teams might get a bye in the play.
Both these teams will make the Big Ten quarterfinals.
Yeah,
whatever the hell it is.
God, I forget they're in. They're not both going to get a bye because they're in the same conference now. Oh, I hate realignment so much.
No, Sean, this was a Big Ten matchup for the ages.
I hate realignment.
Everybody knows when Penn State goes to Oregon, that is classic. It's October. It's the Big Ten. It's in Eugene.
It's so stupid.
It's a beautiful match. AM. It's beautiful.
I hate realignment.
Change is good, Sean.
ALCS gets started tonight. Yankees and Guardians. Dodgers take a 1-0 lead in the NLCS over the Mets last night. All right, let's get to we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans. What the locker room speech sound like after yesterday's big win over the Patriots? And we will relive yesterday's game, the high points from yesterday's game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We will do that. We acknowledge. At 7:20, we got a Texans heavy acknowledge me coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Sharpest John to your reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's go inside the locker room. We love doing this after Texans victories. We get to hear what D'Amico Ryans had to say to the team. Texans beat the Patriots 41-21 yesterday. Here's what it sounded like in the locker room afterwards.
Hey, man, hey, congrats to everybody, man. Really awesome job, right? Way to come up here, right, and do us, right? We played really well. We bought the energy. We did us well. Still, a lot to clean up, but I love the way you guys came out. Offense, 192 rushing yards. Way to run the rock, man. Way to run the rock. Beautiful to see. Defense, 4 takeaways. Way to hunt. And not only taking the ball away, but offense able to capitalize and score off of the takeaways. Outstanding job in special teams. We talked about being disruptive. You guys are disruptive all day, man. So great job. Special team, offense, defense, all the way across the board. All right. For us, man, as an organization, right, we already know it's our first time with a win here. All right, first time with a win. So everybody get a game ball. Everybody, man. Proud of everybody. Let's get this plane back to Houston. Let's go.
Let's get this plane back to Houston. That was great. So D'Amico Ryans.
I see Will Anderson down helping load luggage probably onto the plane.
With a smile on his face.
Yeah, he would. I probably shouldn't have even just put that out there. Somehow that's going to get back to him, and he's definitely going to want to try it now.
Definitely help out, for sure. D'Amico, with a tip of the hat to the history of the organization with the Patriots and how this kind of this gets them off the schneid, gets the monkey off their back. They finally win a game there. One part of the game script that he touched on there that was really important that we haven't hit too hard. We've mentioned the turnovers, but we haven't really mentioned how they capitalized on the turnovers in the second half. They scored 17 points in the second half off of all those short fields that they got. So they were very opportunistic, not only in causing the turnovers, but in turning them into points immediately as well. That's how you keep
it. Yeah, that was taking advantage of the short field. The Texans defense had been dealt some short fields throughout the first part of the season.
Yes.
And that was one of the things that kept some of the stats from lining up with how well the Texans defense has actually been playing.
Yep.
But yeah, likewise, the offense took advantage of short fields and scored points off of turnovers. You take the ball away 4 times from the opponent, and that should be good enough. Like, that's where, I mean, that you're going to win that game unless you really screw it up. And they end up winning by 20 against an inferior opponent. Yeah. D'Amico brings up that there's things to clean up. Yes, that was not a perfect game or anything, but you did enough of the really important things right in that game that it ends up being a 20-point victory.
Absolutely. Let's relive some of it here through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. And let's start. This was really good to see, man. No Nico Collins, so we knew that there was going to be more Tank Dell than we'd seen through the first five games of the season, and we saw it early.
Mixon to the backfield, and now Diggs joins the party. Stroud fakes the give, sprints out to the right, throws to the end zone, caught, touchdown, Tank Dell! Houston scores on the opening drive.
That's another one of those throws when you go watch it, especially from behind the center, you know, from behind CJ. It's not an easy throw. You know, like, it's, you know, Tank's not wide open there, you know?
No, and I thought there was somebody yesterday who wasn't trying to be snarky or anything said he felt like CJ's ball placement isn't what it used to be. And I think it's because yesterday there were he threw a lot of low balls, but most of them were low for a reason.
Yeah.
And it was a matter of just putting the ball where it was the safest to avoid a collision with a guy over the middle, whatever it might be. And I thought the exact opposite. I thought in really tough situations and under duress, he was very good with his ball placement yesterday. And especially when you don't have Nico Collins necessarily offsetting and creating easy throws elsewhere, he really had to work for a lot of those throws.
He did. Yep, that was good to see Tank get involved. That made it 7-0. Texans, just like last week, they were kind of piling up the yards early in the game. And good to see Joe Mixon get back in the scoring column to make it 14-0.
Give him a new set of downs to see what we do with it here.
First and goal at the 10, Stroud of the gun. Mixon shifting to the left of CJ, who gets the snap and fires out to the left. Has Joe at the 5 and walks in at the pylon. Touchdown, Texans.
Walked in, placed the ball down, and ran back over to the bench. They made that one look easy right there. Pass to Mixon. That was good to see.
Yeah, and I think Mixon is a receiver, obviously, yesterday. Just was very potent and does a lot of those things that Daria Gumboale can do as a receiver out of the backfield, but with the added benefit of actually being a good running back as well.
Yeah,
so that the offset between those two is really nice.
Were you worried in the third quarter of how little Mixon was playing that he might be banged up again? Damian was getting a lot of carries in the third quarter of that game.
Yeah, I didn't know. I know, especially... yes, I was. Yeah. And I didn't know if it was a matter of a pitch count type of thing, especially with the cushion that you had at that point.
Yes.
And they want to see what they have in Damian.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Damian early on, the first run, I haven't gone back and watched it, but it looked like Mixon could have turned that into like a 10-yard run.
Yes.
The first run that Damian Pierce got stuffed on.
Yep.
And I was a little bit nervous. Then Damian obviously started getting into the flow and did just fine.
We'll get to Damian a little later this segment, but we're reliving some of the high points and low points of yesterday's game. A little like last week's game, too. The Texans went into a bit of a lull in the second quarter. Kyme Fairbairn misses a field goal that would have put him up 3 scores. That kind of reminded me of Dari getting stuffed on 4th-and-1 last week. You know, like, oh, okay, it's, you know, you're allowing this team to hang around a little bit. And then CJ, another uncharacteristic turnover in the second quarter.
Texans leading 14-0, 10:37 to go before the break. Houston in Liberty white jerseys, deep steel blue pants and helmets. Here's Mechie to the left side. X in the slot. Dell wide side right. And CJ in the gun with Pierce on the backfield with him. CJ takes the snap, surveying the field. Now steps to his right, throws to the end zone. Bobbled and picked off. Oh my goodness, it's Jones. He's going to bring it out. 5.
Yeah, we're good.
10.
He ran, he returned it. Yeah. Was that one, the blame seemed to me on the text page and on Twitter to be split between C.J. Stroud and Dalton Schultz on that.
I went back. I got to try to watch the TV copy more closely, or the All-22's out. I'll just try to see if there's a better angle right there from the end zone. That was a classic one where I can't technically blame Dalton Schultz, but I think there are receivers that would have plucked that, you know, and at the very least, it would have bounced to the turf because it was contested and it wasn't perfect. Ideally, it would have been a little bit further beyond Dalton Schultz, but... I partially blame Dalton Schultz for not being more impressive in that regard, and especially if he hadn't dropped that one later in the game, then I would be a little bit more forgiving. But man, Dalton Schultz is so weird because He's got an ability to make some incredible catches, and yet sometimes he makes the easier catches look so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that one yesterday. I mean, last year against the Titans, Dalton Schultz robbed an interception. Yeah. Robbed an interception of a defensive back.
Yes.
This was the opposite, where he got robbed of something that at the very least should have been more contested than
it was. Should have got his hands on it, for sure. You know, fortunately, the defense holds up there. The interception doesn't turn into anything. However, this was probably the most disappointing part of the game. It's all gravy after this, Texans fans, but we should point this out, that the Patriots did go into the locker room with some momentum at halftime after this Drake May touchdown pass, first of his career.
Second and three at the Houston 40. May in the gun, one back Hasty. Here's the snap. May dropping back deeper after taking it. Guns long down the right side. Caught, touchdown. Unbelievable. Kayshon Booty with the TD reception as the Patriots get on the board with 11 seconds to go in the second quarter, and this changes the game.
That was a hell of a throw by Drake May right there. That was a nice throw to
it was a really nice throw. It was Derek Stingley also. I think he's usually really, really good at tracking the ball in the air, and it looked like, because he was running pace for pace with Boutte, and it just looked like he'd misjudged the ball a little bit, and it ended up being uncontested. If he had just, which was, you know, credit to Drake May and Boutte for working him properly on that one.
What was your nervousness level coming out of the half, given that the Texans pretty much dominated the first half, and yet, because of that sequence at the end of the half, they're only up 14-7, and the Patriots get the ball to start the second half. Were you concerned at all that this was going to turn into one of those afternoons that we've seen all season long where it's a close game down the stretch?
I honestly was really excited about what a good pass rush the Texans were getting with a four-man rush. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that D'Amico blitzed as much as he did in the second half, and I felt like I don't know if they were – they're banking on getting a Caleb Williams type of result out of Drake May, but I think Drake May now is just a little bit further along in some regards. And he has better, like, I think that then Caleb Williams was in week two. Caleb Williams has come a long way since week two.
He has, yeah.
So I don't know. I felt like when you've got liabilities on the coverage side of things in your defensive backfield, don't put those guys in a situation where they got to be playing a bunch of man with a single high safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one decision in being as aggressive as they were in the second half that I didn't think they needed to do.
Yeah.
But.
Yep. The Texans come out at the half. Patriots get the ball to start the half. Two plays in, this to me, I was a little nervous coming out, just that this thing was going to be closer than it needed to be in the second half. But Danielle Hunter took care of that.
Toa with
close,
the green dot calling defensive signals. May gets the snap. He's got a little time, and now he's sacked. The ball is out. Hunter got it out, and Edwards recovers at the 10-yard line. Strip sack.
Drake May is still down.
Dre empathizing with the QB there. we got a chuckle out of that on the postgame show.
For me, it was whenever Drake May looked like he might be injured after a play, I was like, oh no, not Jacoby Brissett.
I said the same thing to Clint. Because Clint was saying yesterday when we were watching it up here, the way that Drake May, he was more concerned about Drake May health-wise with kind of just the cavalier way he was running with the football and putting his head down and things like that. He's like, Chief, this guy's going to get hurt, man. He's going to get hurt. And I'm like, no, Brissett might give them a chance.
No, that's a sparkly.
Yeah. But I thought that was the play we just heard. I thought that was the biggest play of the game to me, because that I thought it sort of recalibrated the momentum in the game.
Yeah.
It took the crowd out of the game. And then two plays later, this happens.
Second and goal from the 10. Offset eye formation. Digs to the right side. And the pistol, as CJ's between the eyes, fakes the give, throws to the end zone, hits Stephon Diggs, touchdown Houston. A bullet to Stephon.
Yeah, so that made it 27-7, I think, something like that, 20, I forget. But that made it 21-7, that Diggs touchdown right there to start the half. That was a big sequence for the Texans right there.
Look, Diggs and Tank Dell, as we talked about yesterday in the pregame, you got to kind of step back and remember, okay, there are a lot of teams in the league that would be very, very happy to have Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell out there as your primary receivers.
Yep.
The Patriots yesterday, for instance, would have loved to have that situation.
Ecstatic, yes.
Yes, yeah, they would have been cool. They would have been just cool with that. I thought the The pass protection versus four-man rushes, I think, has been pretty good for a few weeks now or a couple weeks now. Mm-hmm. The blitzes continue to be a bit of a headache and a nightmare, both in the run game and the pass game. CJ does a really good job with making the best of those. But there were also, you know, CJ took a sack yesterday on a blitz where it wasn't an offensive lineman or anybody in pass protection. It was just a well-timed, well-called blitz that CJ didn't see coming, and he took a sack. So there's still the blitz is a work in progress, but there's a lot of signs of progress in pass protection.
Big time. We'll get to Will Anderson and acknowledge me in just a few minutes and acknowledge all three of his sacks. Will Anderson had a great day. Yeah, he's got a chance to be Defensive Player of the Week, I think, based on the day he had yesterday. But I love this play from Will Anderson here. This had nothing to do with taking the quarterback down. Will Anderson tip, and then Eric Murray with the pick.
First down, Patriots at their 22. One back, Gibson. Here's May in the gun. Floats the ball left side. It's tipped, and it's intercepted. The Texans have it at the 26-yard line. Who came down with it? Off the deflection, Eric Murray. Celebration ensues. Photo op in the end zone.
That was one of the stranger interceptions, because Will tips the ball.
Right.
It goes up, and it lands in the – it almost, like, disappeared into a crowd.
It was the David Tyree catch. It was the helmet catch all over again to the Patriots.
Yep.
Kids, back when the Patriots lost their first Super Bowl, it started a long trend of losing Super Bowls for the Patriots. Yeah. They almost never recovered from it. Eli Manning threw up a prayer of a football, and David Tyree reached over and caught the ball over the helmet of a Patriots defender.
Pinned it on his own helmet, Tyree.
That's right, yeah. So this was in reverse.
Yeah.
But he caught it over his own helmet off the back of it. This was in reverse over a Patriots defender helmet.
Yep.
And it was awesome that it was happening to a Patriots defender.
It was.
So it was a little bit of like a – it was like the mirror image of the helmet catch.
Of the helmet catch, yeah, that's a good way to put it. So Eric Murray coming down with that. I believe that was the last turnover of the day for the Patriots. The turnover train was over. But I was glad we got this moment, because it's been a tough year and a half for Damian Pierce, man. This was great to see to close out the scoring for the Houston Texans.
First down, Texans at the Houston 46. Clock at 8 minutes to go. 13-point lead. Here's a toss to Pierce. Running right. Pierce across the 50. Pierce breaks the tackle. 45, 40, right sideline. The 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. He's got the touchdown. Damian Pierce to the house.
I think that was Andre banging on the counter, because I saw a video of Mark on that call. Like, Aaron Raybould, the engineer for those guys, put a little camera that faces up at Mark making these calls. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see Mark banging his hand. So it might have been Andre banging his hand. I was banging my hand on the table, because I was that excited for Damian Pierce. That was great
to
see.
This is the great thing about that run, was that they were running zone, outside zone, and it was not perfect blocking. Mm-hmm. But it gave up that thing that good running backs in zone runs are able to do, is, okay, the blocking doesn't have to be perfect as long as you've got the linebackers running laterally.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two defenders unblocked on that play, except that Damian put his foot in the ground, turned up, and then just hit the crease and broke a couple tackles on the way there. That was very, very encouraging, because I think the way they called the run game yesterday, it was a more of a hodgepodge of zone runs and gap scheme stuff, where guys, things are a little bit more defined. And I thought that both Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce did a great job with it, of making the blocking right, even when it wasn't perfect. That was great to see out of Damian Pierce, because that's something we really didn't see in the preseason.
No, we didn't see in the preseason. We haven't seen it in a while. And it made me think of what you've said many times about this offense, and you even said it earlier in the show today, which is, even when you're only running for, you know, 3.8 yards per carry, whatever, there is an element where you're pounding away, pounding away, pounding away. Damian broke probably three tackles on that carry,
yeah.
And maybe if that exact same run happens midway through the second quarter, the defense might have a little bit more juice to them. They were, you know, the Texans had been pounding them all afternoon, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's an element of the dam begins to break.
Yes.
And it's not even necessarily physically or endurance-wise. It's just getting into the beat and the rhythm of exactly how the run game is working that day. If this were already a good rushing offense, we would say, oh yeah, that's how it goes. I mean, this is how it was with Kubiak back in the Arian Foster days. There were a lot of times in the first half where it felt like, I don't know, man, the run game's just not clicking. Then all of a sudden in the third quarter, the dam breaks. And it felt a little bit like that yesterday.
A text message. We're going to get to acknowledge me here in just a second. Text message, was I the only one who felt like Laramie just decided to take a seat in the second half since we had the game in hand?
Blake Fisher. No, Laramie's been banged up for a couple weeks now.
I know, but the sideline reporter, I can't recall her name, didn't do him any favors. When
oh,
she
what'd
was,
she do?
She was reporting on Tunsil like in the fourth quarter, like giving an update on Tunsil, and she used the word, he's just relaxing on the bench over there. I'm like, ma'am, you have no idea what type of bee's nest you just kicked by telling Texan fans that Laramie is, quote, relaxing on the sideline.
Blake Fisher had a really nice block with alongside Kenyon Green on the Joe Mixon touchdown, where Blake Fisher and Kenyon blasted the defensive tackle with a double team, and then Blake Fisher worked up to the linebacker and sealed him off. There was another good example of a play where the blocking was all good, but Joe Mixon made it look really good.
Sure, he bounced outside.
And he bounced out. He had a nice little Stephon Diggs had the perfect micro hold that you can get away with when you just got to have a nice little tug. It was just enough to spring Joe Mixon around the end. It was a good example of with Dario Gumbawale or Cam Akers, it wouldn't have looked like that. It was a combination of, okay, the blocking's just good enough, and Joe Mixon does everything he needs to do with it.
What's it? People are all over Laramie, the text page. When watching the game and seeing the announcement that Laramie Tunsil was questionable, did anybody else say to themselves, well, he's out. There's no way he's coming back in the game with an owie. He came back a couple weeks ago with an owie, right?
He did. He came back in the game.
I didn't think he would be holding calls afterwards.
Right, but still.
Right. Well, no, but I'm using this text as an opportunity to play off of that and point out that not just Laramie, but the offensive line as a whole has really cleaned things up the last 2 weeks in terms of the pre-snap penalties and the holds. Like the offensive line has played two very clean games in a row here.
Let's give them credit for the stuff they're supposed
they're
to do.
They're not getting acknowledged. I'm not going to give them a Roman Reigns here, but I just want to point out, getting lost in the shuffle, is that for all the what felt like lip service for a couple weeks from D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick about, hey, we're fixed. Because D'Amico, after the first 12 penalty games, said, no, we'll get this fixed. And then two more games are getting 11 penalties and 12 penalties. And I hate to be in a place where I'm not believing wholeheartedly in everything that D'Amico Ryans is telling me. And that's the place I was going to. They've cleaned it up.
The Texans had four penalties yesterday. The average in an NFL game is about 6.5 per team. So they were actually, I believe this was the first time, at least since week one, I can't remember, this year that they've been below the league average for penalties.
Someone saying Tunsil got his ankle twisted. No, we know. I appreciate you pointing that out. We know why he was sitting on the bench. He did get hurt. He did get hurt in the game. And that'll be something we'll monitor this week. He's been dealing with an ankle.
We're doubting whether he actually had an injury or not.
We saw his ankle get twisted.
How little do these people think of us? What the hell? Man. Yes. He was genuinely injured.
Yes.
The people just question whether or not, you know. Like the Instagram offensive tackles for the Texans don't have an image of being like that. Those guys miss a lot of time with a lot of stuff.
They do.
That doesn't require season-ending injury surgery.
They do. All right, let's get to acknowledge me. On Mondays, about this time, we acknowledge the big performances from over the weekend. Byron is in for Ben today. Byron, just for sake of time, let's skip straight to the third sack from Will Anderson rather than play all three. Just so we get all of our acknowledgments in. But Will Anderson yesterday, we acknowledge.
Acknowledge me.
A great stat line. J.J. Watt type box score, man. 8 tackles, 3 sacks, 4 TFLs, 3 QB hits. A pass tip that you heard in our Voice of Vandy segment there that resulted in an interception. Here's what the hat trick sounded like.
Third down and a long 10 from the Patriot 40. May shotgun, 2 receivers each side, 1 back Gibson. Here's the snap to May. He's in trouble. He's sacked back at the 30-yard line. Will Anderson Jr., hat trick.
Is that the hat trick?
Yes, it is.
That's a hat
3
trick.
On the day for Will.
3 on the day. Here's C.J. Stroud after the game on Will's hat trick.
Oh, man, it was super cool. I was super happy for him.
you know, he's a dog. So, you know, I'm definitely just proud of him. I know he's been hunting. You know, he always talks about chopping wood, carrying water, you know. So it's good for that to pay off finally.
Yeah, baby.
I told you he mentioned chop that wood, carry water. Yeah, chop wood, carry water.
Yep. Will Anderson, huge. Seth, we know Will Anderson's a really good player, defensive rookie of the year. The hope was that from year one to year two, we see that big jump, kind of like J.J. Watt took a big jump from year one to year two back in the day. Is this Will beating up on a sad sack offensive line, or is this a sign that Will Anderson has taken that step from year one to year two?
Well, it's a little bit of both. Good defensive ends do not all of a sudden just decide to take the day off when they're facing bad offensive tackles.
That's right.
But that's when some of the good stuff that you're doing really can show up in droves. I think that there was he showed some bend yesterday and an ability to get around the edge that I don't know if his ankle was still bothering him early in the season or not, but we haven't quite seen a lot of it. And he's been getting really close to the quarterback. They've been pressuring him and flushing him a lot. He just hasn't completed the deal. So I think it's a little bit of both. And I thought the best thing was on his third sack. That was a veteran sack in that he avoided the chip block by the tight end and without breaking stride or missing a beat, converted it into a speed rush on the offensive tackle. That's like a level of anticipation and understanding of what's going on that he didn't have as a rookie. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah, very good to see. Will Anderson, huge, huge game yesterday. Another guy with a huge game yesterday. Great to have him back. Joe Mixon.
Acknowledge
Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, a touchdown receiving early in the game, and then helps seal the deal with this rushing touchdown.
Second down and four at the 20-yard line of New England. Mixon in the backfield, CJ under center. Stroud gives to Joe. Over left guard, bounces to the outside, 15, 10, 5 to the pylon. He's got it! Touchdown, Joe Mixon! Checked back into the game and checks into the end zone for 6 on a 20-yard TD run.
Mixon has played 2 full games for the Texans, week 1 and yesterday. He's gone over 100 yards in each of those games. Yesterday, it only took 13 carries to get over 102 yards, obviously highlighted by that big 59-yard run in the first half yesterday.
Somebody yesterday said, well, you know, I feel like if Cam Akers got as many opportunities as Joe Mixon did, then he would. I mean, he had 12 carries. How many carries?
13
carries. Yeah, he didn't get that many opportunities, actually.
No.
So, no, he's different. Okay, that was somebody that...
Don't worry about that.
Cam Akers and Joe Mixon, it was stupid for me even to acknowledge that person making that point.
Yeah.
They're different. I think that Bobby Slowick, too, even though it was frustrating earlier in the game when the run game wasn't going, I think he's starting to find a little bit of what this offensive line can and cannot do. And they're blending zone blocking with some gap scheme stuff in a way that suits this offensive line, where they're building some stuff off the zone running, but that kind of hits the easy button in terms of your assignments. And some of the things they're doing with the fullbacks and tight ends is really cool, too. They just got to keep building on it and getting good at it. But like we pointed out earlier, that I saw some people yesterday saying, like, yeah, you see, you got to abandon the zone run. Damian Pierce's was an outside zone, and he hit it perfectly. Yep. But it was also built off of some of the things they were doing inside earlier in the game. So that was a step in the right direction for, I think, where Bobby Slowick's figuring out what these guys can and cannot do.
Yep.
And it changes depending on who the running back is.
For sure. Here was an exchange. Joe Mixon meeting with the media after the game, talking about he said he's been out there, you know, on the field while the ankle's been hurt. It sounds like he's been ready to go for a while, but the team is kind of playing it cautious.
That you can not only go, but go and make a difference and play like yourself.
Yeah, just to let y'all know, like, I've been on the field.
Yes, sir.
Just so you know.
Okay.
Been on the field. It's just, you know, things wasn't really ready. And I'm just glad that I had the opportunity for, you know, my coaches to believe in me, man, and finally throw me out there. And I felt a big weight off my shoulders and missing time and going out there with my brothers and going out there competing and obviously trying to do whatever we can to come out with the dub. So, I mean, that's a hell of a feeling. And like I keep telling you, I know the player that I am, and I'm just happy that I'm able to showcase that right now.
I think from Joe Mixon's comments after the game and Joe Mixon's comments on Friday, very much get the image that he's been champing at the bit, trying yes. to get back out there. Yeah. And he's been, he almost, I feel like he almost is, sounded a little agitated that he wasn't allowed to play earlier than yeah. he was. So they have been, they've been practicing the utmost of caution and trying to wait until he's 100%, 100% to get back.
In a weird way, that exchange, the sound from late last week that you're alluding to, maybe this is the eternal optimist in me. It makes me feel better about them putting Nico Collins on IR.
It makes, oh, yeah.
It makes me feel like the thought process of this team is we know we've got a good team, and especially this part of the schedule, we know we can manage with yeah. with missing a few guys. Let's do our best to make sure that we've got all of our horses for the really brutal part of the schedule that comes up about starting with like the Lions on that Sunday night game. There's yeah. there's a lot of really important football coming up over the next month and a half after that.
Well, and especially when Nico Collins had that hamstring pop up a couple weeks ago, yeah. and then he ended up playing. Remember, he was added to the injury report on like a Thursday. He ended up playing that week,
yeah.
and but then it pops up again. That's when you say, no, we can't have this being all season long. And then all of a sudden in the playoffs, it pops up again. You're going to get healthy. You're going to be 100% for a couple weeks before you yeah. can come back and play football.
Yeah, like if caution was the name of the game with Mixon, it would stand to reason that caution would be the name of the game with Nico. And they're not going to – they don't want to hamstring – I hate that I have to use that as the verb here because it's a hamstring. But they don't want to have to hamstring themselves by Nico taking up a roster spot for these 4 weeks. You know, yeah. they need five receivers on the roster.
There's a reason why the expression is what it is, Sean. Because that's what a hamstring does to you, man.
It's true. It's true. All right, let's keep it moving. Mario Edwards Jr.
Acknowledge me!
Defensive tackle for the Texans. I want to make sure we acknowledge some of the guys kind of below the radar. This was the Danielle Hunter strip sack in the early third quarter of yesterday's game.
Toa. We're close, though. Dot calling defensive signals. May gets the snap. He's got a little time, and now he's sacked. The ball is out. Hunter got it out, and Edwards recovers at the 10-yard line. Strip sack.
Drake May is still down.
All right, there we go. Mario Edwards recovering that fumble. Mario Edwards, you know, defensive interior defensive tackle, especially when you got some stud defensive ends, can be a bit of a thankless task. Mario Edwards Jr. has shown up a bunch this season. And he showed up a bunch yesterday in the fumble recovery right there. I want to make sure he gets acknowledged. That's been a nice signing for the Texans.
That's been a nice signing. And I think, too, that those defensive tackles have been just, I think, under a lot of scrutiny in a lot of ways. And I think part of it, I blame PFF. PFF, Pro Football Focus, sometimes in the way they dole out grades defensively, it doesn't account for scheme as well, because there's times where it's hard for these defensive tackles and the way they ask them to play to always anchor down properly because they're not playing like an old two-gap system. It used to be like this with Connor Barwin back in the Wade Phillips defense, and after Wade Phillips, where Connor Barwin would have these horrible Pro Football Focus grades, and I would watch a game, and I'm like, well, no, you guys clearly, like, you're grading him down for not rushing the passer well on a play where he had to jam the tight end first. Like, all this kind of stuff they would ask. So don't be misled by the Pro Football Focus grades with those guys. They're playing way better than they are. Mm-hmm. They're not prototype defensive tackles for what you want, but I think they're playing above their pay grade.
Yeah.
Patakasi had some kind of a jump on the snap early.
That was crazy. Yeah, I don't think he even realized he was touching Drake May as he sailed right past Drake May on that play.
Yeah, I feel like they had to talk about going on two every now and then after that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that was wild. Someone saying on the text page, don't forget to mention Azeez Al-Shaair's peanut punch on the force fumble. You know what? Text page, I don't do it. I'll acknowledge Azeez Al-Shaair.
Acknowledge me!
The peanut punch.
We always acknowledge peanuts on this radio
punch.
Show. So, the peanuts, yes. The other guy, too, is, you know who led the team in tackles yesterday?
Who led the team? Well, I think Will Anderson, right? Or was it, who was it?
It was Neville Hewitt.
Really?
Neville Hewitt led the team in tackles. Hold on, Seth's citing statistics. I didn't look this up during the show.
You're okay? Right, nine tackles, Neville Hewitt.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. He got a lot of run in the second half of that game.
Yeah, he did, and we'll find out hopefully an update on Aziz Alshire this afternoon.
Why did he lead the team in tackles?
Yes, I know. And boy, Neville. Now that's another one that, man, versus a different opponent, it's you're limited a little bit in coverage with Neville Hewitt out there. But Neville Hewitt, he does love to hit some people.
He does.
Half his tackles look like he's running down on punt coverage. So he's not going to give you the same things that Aziz Alshire can give you, but he can give you some hellacious hits.
He will. Whoever he hits remembers that they played the Texans that day. The NFC North.
Acknowledge me.
Acknowledge the NFC North because they are the first division since the merger in 1970, where through the first 6 weeks of the season, every team has 4+ wins. Why is that significant? The Vikings are 5-0. They were on a bye yesterday. The Lions destroyed the Cowboys yesterday. Let's acknowledge the Lions here real quick, too, Byron, for destroying the Cowboys. Thank you for that, Lions, yesterday. And then the Bears and the Packers are both 4-2. I bring this up because this is the division the Texans cross over with. Like, we thought the schedule, Seth, was going to be really hard for a variety of reasons for the Texans.
Right.
I did not count on the NFC North through the part of the season where the Texans are, by and large, playing the NFC North being the toughest division in all of football. I think the Vikings would be this good. I think the Bears would be this good.
Yeah.
Lions and Packers, we knew they were going to be good.
I think it's because the Bears defense is for real.
Yeah.
That Bears defense, as we saw, they can be an SOB to go against. I think the Texans are probably, it's a good thing that they caught Caleb Williams when they did. If you'd had that game scheduled towards the end of the year, not that he's unbeatable or anything, but he's a much better quarterback now than he was in week two.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Steve Sarkisian.
Acknowledge me.
Texas destroyed OU 34-3. He's the head coach of the Longhorns. I like that he showed up at the press conference eating a corn dog, because apparently Brent Venables, the largely overwhelmed head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners, said during the week, I don't know if Brent Venables hates corn dogs or something like that, but he said apparently during the week that if OU beat Texas, he would eat a corn dog at the press conference.
Oh.
So Steve Sarkisian took a nice little jab at him, and it's like, oh, this is a very
gave him the old upside down corn dog.
Yeah.
That's what he should have walked in with. He should have walked in with a corn dog. You know, the upside down horns.
Yeah.
He should have put a corn dog on each finger and walked in doing the upside down corn dogs.
Man, Texas looks good.
You can see it on the YouTube.
On the YouTube
stream, would look like. Yeah.
Seth's got the upside down corn dogs working right there. Yeah, man, UT looks good. UT looks good. So, by proxy, I'm acknowledging the Longhorns.
It seemed like there were a lot of flag planting scenarios in college football this
weekend. That'll come up in the petty cast tomorrow. I don't think there's anything we've seen more petty than what UT did after the game. That's as petty as it gets, man.
Did they plant a Baker Mayfield?
They laid a Baker Mayfield jersey on the logo at midfield and took the Longhorn flag and stabbed it right through where Baker Mayfield's heart would have been had he been wearing that jersey.
I'm going to tell you something right now, having watched the Menendez Brothers documentaries.
Here we go.
This ventures into premeditated category. This is not something done on the spur of the moment.
They had a Baker Mayfield jersey.
Like, wait a second. You were spotted in a paraphernalia shop looking for Baker Mayfield jerseys before the game. You knew you were going to do this.
Yes, 100%. 100%. All right. So there you go. That's Acknowledge Me. We do it every Monday on the show. All right, up next, let's continue with the Texans. No Nico yesterday. Was this? I don't know if you noticed. It seemed to work out just fine without him. Is what we saw yesterday, they did it against the Patriots. How much does what we saw sans Nico Collins translate, most importantly, for this week against the Green Bay Packers? We will get to that coming up next.
Mixon stays in. John Mechie in a bunch to the left side. Estrada will operate from the shotgun set. First half from the Houston 46-yard line. Just underway at New England. Stroud takes the snap. Looking. Pocket collapsing. CJ running forward. Now throwing last moment. Rolling catch by Tank Dell at the 35-yard line of New England. They'll mark him at the 34. A big play to Tank.
Just so fast. He made it look like he was going to go to the corner. And then
the Patriots 18-yard line. Crowd revs it up. Dari Ogunbowale in the game in the backfield with C.J. in the gun. Three receivers to the wide side right. Here's the snap to Stroud. Here's the rush. CJ looking, firing downfield to his right. Diggs with the catch, and he gets out of bounds inside the five-yard line. First and goal.
Man, those are I play those two highlights bumping back because that was those were both on the first drive of the game, and I think that was to me, Seth, as we welcome you back in, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. My big question on the first drive of the game is, what's this going to look like? What's it going to look like with Mixon in there, and what's it going to look like without Nico Collins in there? And I think I think those two plays were kind of emblematic of when this offense was clicking, how they were using Diggs and Dell. Neither of them had big, massive chunk plays in the game,
yeah.
But they were constantly moving the chains in this game. Dell with the big 20-yard catch to flip field position early, and then the catch you heard from Stephon Diggs was actually his second catch on that drive. That got them in the goal-to-go situation. Really nice catch. Made it look easy. CJ and Steph made it look easy on a play that was not easy along the sideline there. And then a couple plays later, Tank Dell scores a touchdown. You go up 7-0. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game on the game that Tank and Steph had yesterday.
Yeah, it wasn't surprising to see Steph and Tank step up and make the plays. I hate to say that they're stepping up, right? It was just they maximize their opportunities. That's who those guys have been. So to say step up is probably an understatement for these guys. They're playmakers as well, and that's what they've been. You know, Tank in his short career has been a playmaker for us, and so we all know what Diggs has done throughout his career of being a top guy. So not surprising at all.
I think the Diggs connection is one that I guess, because if you're hoping for fireworks or you're hoping for deep shots to Stephon Diggs, then maybe you're disappointed. But I think his value underneath, especially if and when Nico Collins comes back, is just so valuable. He has a really good connection with CJ Stroud already after just, you know, minimal amount of time working with each other. Diggs has a real ability to get good separation underneath, whether it's zone or man. And he really is a security blanket in a lot of ways on the scramble drill and when the play breaks down, where it doesn't feel like they have to get out of timing or rhythm or anything. They've just got they know what each other's reactions are going to be.
He's so reliable. Like when the ball goes in his direction, if it's in his catch radius, he's catching that thing. And he's tough, man. He's tough.
You know what the best thing about Diggs is? You can point him out to young receivers in this regard. Coming back to the ball. And I think Trent Green pointed it out on the broadcast yesterday.
Yeah.
But he does. He aggressively comes back for the ball and takes a lot of plays that other receivers would have turned into a contested play or wouldn't be able to get run after the catch. Like, Diggs comes back aggressively for the ball and then turns and gets run after the catch. The other thing, too, is just his ball security.
Yes.
When catching it over the middle or in traffic. I mean, he covers it up like he's a tight end. And he's running through with the ball cradled to his chest with both arms.
Did you see on the play, I think it was Drake May's first scramble of the game. I think it was the play that you were talking about earlier where Fadakasi was in the backfield, probably a little early, and he kind of ran right by Drake May, and May ends up scrambling on that play for about 8 yards. Drake May was not going to fumble that football. He had both arms cradled. He was running it like a fullback used to run with the ball through the line back in the mid-70s.
I know what. I think as much as we old men love to grouse about the lack of fundamentals, not like back when we played and we were technically perfect all the time, I feel like today's generation has more understanding of ball security.
They value the turnovers.
You very rarely see a dude of note that carries the ball in one hand
out
to the side, like an Eric Dickerson or something like that. Like, they're very, very secure.
This was extreme fundamentals, though. They always talk about the 3 points of pressure.
Yeah.
Drake May had like 11 points of pressure on that football. He was not letting that thing go.
He was like, man, the rest of these guys suck bad enough. I'm not going to compound
I'm not going to be the reason we lose.
It
would
have been awesome if he'd gotten up in the press conference afterwards and when somebody asked how he felt about his performance, I'm like, did you see those guys blocking for me?
Right.
It's about as good as you could expect, right?
Yeah. Made these receivers look pretty good, didn't I?
Yeah.
33 yards. Got a few people. Two things we've got people weighing in on here that we haven't touched much. Well, one we have not at all. What did you think of the Kendrick Green at fullback scenarios that we had yesterday?
Not so enthused about it. Not so enthused. This is the one part. I gave Slowick acknowledgement for some of the things they did in the run game. I think, man, there's just this there's this hunger and appetite to be like, we got to be a team that can just line up and physically mash people.
Yeah.
So one thing I noticed about Kendrick Green is Jerod Mayo had those guys instructed properly. What do you do when a 310-pound guy is barreling at you? You take his knees out and just make it dead in the water. So like, it's not like Kendrick Green was particularly bad as a fullback, but he definitely wasn't effective as a fullback.
Yeah.
I would say that this experiment needs to die in the crib. Okay, just don't explore this any further. The Steelers tried this a few years ago. All right,
neat.
I went back through and looked real quickly. I think I saw the best was like a 4-yard gain. Every other run was for a -2 or a 0-yard gain it might be.
Okay. Yeah, the Steelers tried to legit move him to fullback full time back in the day. Like,
yeah,
new
that's
number
how
and everything. Yeah,
they gave up on him as an offensive lineman completely and had him play. I don't know. Maybe experiment with it and blow out victories, I suppose. But man, not down on the goal line to Dameon Pierce early in the game.
Probably something we'll talk about more tomorrow and throughout the week. We've only got about a minute left here before we hand it off to John and Mark, Texans All Access, Texans Monday. People are excited about getting Denico Autry back this week.
Yeah, that's and Denico, who can do multiple things. He can rush on the edge full time. He can rush inside. He can. He's gonna. I think a lot of these QB scrambles that have factored into the sack total being lower. Denico Autry is a guy who can hoover up a lot of those when the quarterback starts scrambling. He is really impressive in open space for a big man.
Excited to get him back for sure. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media a little later today. You'll have that on Sports Radio 610. We've got coverage of yesterday's big win over the Patriots throughout the day. In the Loop at 10 a.m. The Drive with Sterner and Hughley at 2 p.m. today. Seth, antibodies to you.
Antibodies, and everybody, I'm excited to hear John Harris talk about the run game and some of the tweaks yesterday. I thought they did some really cool things that I'm excited to hear John Harris talk about.
Yep, me too. So stick around for that. That's coming up.